Good morning. We're reading from Micah chapter 4, verses 1 to 5. In the last days, the mountain of the Lord's temple will be established as chief among the mountains. It will be raised above the hills, and people will stream to it. Many nations will come and say, "Come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways, so that we may walk in his paths." The law will go out from Zion, the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He will judge between many peoples, and will settle disputes for strong nations far and wide. They will beat their swords into plowshares, and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not take up sword against nation, nor will they train for war anymore. Sorry, I looked up. I've lost my place. I shall find it. I'm back. Every man will sit under his own vine and under his own fig tree, and no one will make them afraid. For the Lord Almighty has spoken. All the nations may walk in the name of their gods. We will walk in the name of the Lord our God forever and ever. Never lost my place before, you know, when I've been reading like that in church. I wonder if any of you have been to spiritualists or fortune tellers or tried tarot cards or Ouija boards or palm reading, having tea leaves read, or checked the horoscopes in the papers to see what the day or the future might hold. So many people do these things, looking for hope and direction and peace. Maybe all three of these. Before I was a Christian, I went to spiritualists. I had a book on palm reading, and I used to read the horoscopes in the papers. Don't look so shocked, please. Don't worry. It's okay. It's going to be okay. Don't worry. It's got a happy ending. And after I became a Christian and I saw the truth, I burnt the book on palm reading. I'd already stopped reading horoscopes because I realized what a load of rubbish they are and how can the stars tell you anything. And I went to a minister for deliverance from what I open myself up to, because when you're into spiritualism or anything like that, you're opening yourself up to the powers of darkness. And you know that the power of Jesus is just so amazing, because I spent the time when in this minister's office as he did deliverance with me, and I left his office feeling totally clean. The power of Jesus had set me free, and that's the power and the love of God that is there for us. And if we're following Jesus, we don't need to look at any of those things like spiritualism or palm reading or anything else. We just need to look at him, for him, and allow him to direct us and for us to trust him. And he will do it. In Proverbs 3, verse 5 and 6, it says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your paths." That's a promise. That's truth. Because God has known the future from the beginning. And his prophets, like Micah, didn't have to do any of those things that I've already mentioned to actually predict things that might or may not happen in the future. They heard directly from God. And so the things they wrote down were guaranteed to happen. And even though some of those prophecies in the Bible are still to be fulfilled, because they are for the end times, they will be fulfilled. Why? Because God has said it will happen. And their prophecies, which have already been fulfilled, are just amazing in their detail and their accuracy. So there's no reason to doubt that these prophecies, like this one in Micah, will not be fulfilled too. Because we are serving, we are following the living God who knows all things. And these prophets were too. And just to give you a few examples of those prophecies which have come true, with King David, about 1,000 years before Jesus came, in Psalm 22. He actually wrote the words that Jesus spoke on the cross. My God, why have you forsaken me? He wrote, they have pierced my hands and my feet, hundreds of years before crucifixion was invented. And he also wrote the seemingly irrelevant words, in a way it could seem, when you read that. They divide my garments among them and cast lots for my clothing. How would he know or even think about Jesus' clothes being divided by the Roman soldiers? But these things happened exactly as David wrote, even though it's about 1,000 years before Jesus came. And how was he so accurate, even down to small details like they divided my clothes amongst them? Because God knew. Because God gave him the words to write. In Isaiah chapter 53, 700 years or so before Jesus, he wrote exactly what was going to happen to Jesus on the cross with the crucifixion, about how they've pierced his hands and his feet and so much more. And Isaiah also wrote about the temple in Jerusalem, how it will be rebuilt. And he wrote that about 150 years or so before it actually happened. And he actually named the Persian king who was going to make it happen. Cyrus. How can you predict for 150 years, not just what was going to happen, but the actual name of the person, Cyrus, who was going to make it happen? It's because God knows the whole picture. He knows the future from the beginning. And even in Micah, again about 700 years before Jesus was born, he wrote where Jesus was going to be born. We know he says, but you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though you are small among the clans of Judah, out of you will come for me one who will be ruler over Israel. And then he goes on to say, they will live securely, for then his greatness will reach to the ends of the earth, and he will be their peace. How could he have known that his greatness would reach the ends of the earth? Because it had never happened before. It was just so unlikely. And yet the truth is, the greatness of Jesus has reached to the ends of the earth. On top of those, there are about 330 prophecies about Jesus, which he fulfilled, written at least 400 years before he came. And mathematicians have shown that the odds of all those being fulfilled by chance in one man is greater than all the atoms in the universe many times over. And it's important to realize that, unlike the prophets Micah talked about in the previous chapter that you had last week, who he said told fortunes for money, which is very much like spiritualists and fortune tellers today, those words that he was bringing were words brought from God, not for money, but because God told them to. All these prophets of God, God told them to bring those words. And even though it meant for some of them their lives were in danger, some even lost their lives because of bringing the truth that God was bringing. These prophets were spirit-filled. And why it's important to see the relevance that these prophets are true, although this one here in Micah is 2,700 years old or so, it has a relevance and an urgency for us today. And when God says something more than once, it also shows that it's important. And in Isaiah chapter 2, verses 2 to 4, the words that Micah wrote down in these first few verses are repeated virtually identically, word for word. There are just a few tiny exceptions, but otherwise, if you compare the two prophecies, they're virtually identical. Why? Because God had given them the words to say. Before this passage, Micah had been condemning Israel for the way they had been, and the judgment he prophesied came true. And everywhere in the world today, it seems that sin and wickedness, even total evil, is increasing unchecked. And more people are accepting it almost as okay. And even with the terrorism we see going on in the realm, around in the world today, people have almost become desensitized to the atrocities that go on, because we've seen it so often on the television. It's one bombing after another, some hundreds of people being killed here, there and everywhere. And obviously it's an awful thing, but it can become almost normal for us. And in the West today, we're seeing so many people turning away from God and rejecting him. and many not even knowing who Jesus is, some not even knowing who God is. What we're seeing today is what Jesus was saying when he told his disciples, when they asked him about the signs of the end of the age. And because this prophecy in Micah, it says, in the last days. And Jesus was actually saying some of the words when they said, what's going to happen? You know, how do we know that you're coming back? When are these things going to happen? And he said, nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginning of birth pains. Then you'll be handed over to be persecuted and put to death. And you'll be hated by all nations because of me. At that time, many will turn away from the faith and will betray and hate each other. And many false prophets will appear and deceive many people. Because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. But he who stands firm to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations. And then the end will come. Jesus said about people being hated because of him. And in the 20th century, there were more Christian martyrs than all the other previous centuries put together. And that trend is continuing. But Jesus is going to come back. And it says, at that time, the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky, and all the nations of the earth will mourn. They will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and great glory, and he will send his angels with a loud trumpet call. And they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of the earth, heavens to the other. Now learn this lesson from the fig tree. As soon as its twigs get tender and its leaves come out, even so you know that summer is near. Even so, when you see all these things, you know that it is near, right at the door. And why I've said about that is because with this prophecy from Micah, the signs are all there. It starts off heading about the last days, the last years. And the signs are already there that it's close, right at the door. And there is that urgency about this prophecy. But even though things are looking so bad at the moment, possibly worse than they've ever been, with God there is always hope. There is always forgiveness and a new beginning. And this prophecy in Micah isn't fantasy. It's real because God has said so. It's what we have to look forward to when things are going to be so much better. I don't know if you've ever climbed up a mountain. My wife and I once managed to get up the Eiger. And you're impressed, aren't you? Yeah. Fit. And we found it very easy, actually. The part I found hardest was paying the money for the train which takes you up the Eiger and through the mountain up to the Jungfrau. That was actually expensive, actually. So that was the hard part. But the trouble was, once we got to the top of the Jungfrau, we had just a short time of seeing the amazing view all the way around, seeing for miles and miles in different directions. And then the clouds came in. And that was the end of it. And we didn't see any more. With this prophecy, we're given a glimpse of what it will be like. No more terrorists or fear or awful things happening. No more evil. Just peace and everything the way God wants it to be. And it's a wonderful future. It's a wonderful eternity. Better than, I'm sure, anything that we could ever imagine. But we're not quite there yet. When Micah talked about the last days, he was talking about when Jesus comes back to earth, just as we heard just now. And we don't know when that will be, because Jesus himself made it clear that only God knows the time. But the signs are there that he is coming soon. And even though things are so bad now, we are heading for those last days. This prophecy makes it clear that God will have the final victory, as we read what Micah said about what is going to happen. God will have the final victory because there is always that certainty, there's always that hope with God. And people will turn to him, and the Spirit of the Lord will work in the hearts of millions of people, giving them a desire for God. They will be willing to worship him. And it says in verse 2 onwards, many nations will come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord. So that he will, to the house of God, sorry, the God of Jacob. He will teach us his ways so that we may walk in his paths. They will be anxious to learn what he will teach them. They will not only want to learn, but they'll be saying, we will walk in his paths, because they will be willing to put it into practice. And we can feel sad about the majority today who are turning away from God, resulting in so many broken, hurt and damaged lives out there, with people having no hope for eternity, no hope for this life, because they're not walking in his paths. And even though walking in his paths is the best way to do, as Christians sometimes we don't always walk in his paths either. And we can be taught either in sermons or by reading the Bible or reading books and other ways. But sometimes we can be slow to obey. We can be slow to walk in his paths. And that is important. It matters. Because, as I said, this prophecy has relevance. And it does have an urgency for us today. And that's because the end time prophecies, not just of Micah, but of so many other people in the Bible, all tie in together. This is not just a one-off thing with one man coming up with the ideas of what might happen. There are so many end-time prophecies of what's going to happen. They all tie together, and they're all being filled bit by bit, fulfilled bit by bit, and with increasing speed. You know, in Switzerland, we were staying part of the way up a mountain with a Christian group, and one day a lot of us walked the final 2,000 feet. We didn't have to climb, it was a walk, so it's okay. But we walked up the final 2,000 feet or so to the top of this mountain. We had a goal to reach, and the higher we went, the better the views became, the more wonderful it was. And finally we got to the top, and when we got to the top, we could see the mountains on the other side of that mountain that we hadn't been able to see as we were going up. And you could see all around the wonders and the beauty of God's creation. And we wanted to just stop there and take in all that wonderful beauty that God had created. The negative side of it was that getting up there had been quite hard, and for some more than others, because it was quite a steep path going up that way, and sometimes quite difficult. And some who were quite fit managed it well, but others who weren't so fit really struggled with getting up there. In the end, though, the effort was worth it to get up there and see the wonder of it all. We can't just ignore this prophecy. We can't look at it and say it all sounds wonderful. Just like getting up the mountain. It sounds great to be up the top of the mountain looking over. It all sounds wonderful. And ignore what else is written in this prophecy and in the Bible about the last days. Because as things get worse for Christians, it's going to get harder and harder. And just like those who are fit and cope well, we need to be getting stronger. We need to be stronger in our faith with the Lord. Because we have a goal to reach. We have a goal to get to. And it's easy to think, as was said earlier, but in North Devon, it's so peaceful. It's so nice. We live in a wonderful part of the country, wonderful part of the world, and everything is okay. But persecution is starting to come in this country. Not the way it is in other parts of the world, thankfully, at this stage. But we're not seeing the slaughter that goes on. But persecution in subtle ways is coming in. And we've seen people put in jail because of preaching. People have lost their jobs for sharing their faith with others. People have been taken to court for standing up for what is politically correct and what the Bible says. And it's increasing. And Jesus was hated, and we will be too. So if it suddenly happens to us, and it could, will we be willing to take our stand for Jesus? Jesus said, whoever acknowledges me before men, I will also acknowledge him before my Father in heaven. But whoever disowns me before men, I will disown him before my Father in heaven. Micah wrote, all the nations may walk in the name of the Lord, their gods. We will walk in the name of the Lord our God forever and ever. Eternity with God is going to be too beautiful, too important, too precious to lose. We need to be getting strong so that when these things happen, as they will, because it's prophesied, we will be able to stand. There are so many gods that people are worshipping today or trusting in. You know, this is the lucky Buddha. And in India, they've got countless gods. And around the world, there are so many different gods that people are following. And in the West, especially, there are so many gods that people are following. Whether it's the god of money or fame or success or possessions or anything else they're putting their hopes in to give them a sense of purpose, give them some sort of peace or feeling of self-worth. But even as Christians, it's possible to be drawn into these things. And obviously at the moment, we all have money to be able to live. We have homes and we have things in them, which is fine. And some Christians are wealthy, very successful. Some are even famous, which again is fine, as long as we are holding on to these things lightly. But we mustn't be drawn into making them idols or gods, because if we do, it's going to make it harder for us to stand as Christians and to stay faithful when things get really tough, as they're going to, and we're faced with a choice of going the world's way to keep them or giving them up to follow God. God's kingdom is more important, more valuable than anything this world has to offer. And we're going to need to be strong to stand. Spurgeon wrote, when we learn to know God in truth, we do not give him up, but we walk in his name forever and ever. God's covenant with us is an everlasting covenant, reaching beyond time and enduring through eternity. Those who really know and love the Lord will walk in his name forever and ever. So why might we be faced with giving up everything we have at present, even though in this passage here it talks about how wonderful it's going to be when these things happen? Well, things are already secretly in place, preparing for a one world order. And there are other things moving forward towards fulfilling the end time prophecies, which I haven't got time to talk about now. But what I do want to talk about briefly is what it says in the book of Revelation. Again, an amazing prophecy, all about the end times, obviously, and where it talks about the beast of the earth. And in that, it says about this beast, he also forced everyone, small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on his right hand or on his forehead, so that no one could buy or sell unless he had the mark, which is the name of the beast or the number of his name. This calls for wisdom. If anyone has insight, let him calculate the number of the beast, for it is man's number. His number is 666. Now, to some people, or probably to most people, when John was writing that nearly 2,000 years ago, that must have seemed an impossible thing to happen. And even today, some people might say, well, actually, surely that's fantasy. No, it isn't. Because, as I was saying earlier about all these prophecies, God knows the end from the beginning. And if God has told John to write those words, it's because it's going to happen. It's true. And it's happening now. There's been a gradual softening up process towards that end, actually, because two or three years ago, it became law that all dogs had to be microchipped. And people probably thought, well, that's quite a good idea. You know, it's got advantages. So the concept was being fed into people's minds that microchipping is okay. And now we've got contactless debit cards and credit cards because it saves us the extremely tiring effort of typing in four numbers on our pins instead of using the credit card that way. And it's so easy now just to put your card there. You can pay through your phone now. And some banks are wanting to stop cash, and people have already started having a microchip implanted. The chip is the size of a grain of rice and can be used to replace credit cards, keys, train tickets. And the small implants were first introduced in Sweden in 2015, at first confidentially, and then several other countries. And over 3,000 Swedes have now got a microchip implanted. And one woman said, it was fun to try something new and see what one could use it for to make life easier in the future. In Germany, there are estimated between 2,500 to 3,000 people who've had a microchip implanted. And recently in London, about 100 people did it. So it's coming. But the trouble is, it will come to the point where everyone's data will be stored on a microchip. And the only way people will be able to access their money will be by having the chip. But they'll be under the control of the ruling powers. They will know exactly what's happening to everyone all the time. And those powers are the powers of the enemy. Impossible as it may seem, and for John when he's writing that, people must have thought, this is madness, it can't happen. This is true. Jesus said, talking about the signs of the end, when you see all these things, you know that it is near, right at the door. And this is coming now. But the trouble is, for us as Christians, we're going to have a choice of what we do when that comes in. When it does, and I don't know how soon it's going to be, but it's moving very, very fast, actually, for it now to be possible, for this to happen. But for us as Christians, if we want that wonderful eternity that was prophesied there in Micah and in other places, if we want that mountaintop experience, if we want there to be there with God for eternity, we as Christians are going to have to say, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to trust the Lord. Because the warning is, further on in Revelation, it talks about three angels, and it says the third angel followed them and said in a loud voice, if anyone worships the beast and his image and receives his mark on the forehead or the hand, he too will drink the wine of God's fury, which has been poured full strength into the cup of his wrath. He will be tormented with burning sulfur in the presence of the holy angels and of the Lamb, and the smoke of their torment rises forever and ever. There is no rest day or night for those who worship the beast and his image, or for anyone who receives the mark of his name. This calls for patient endurance on the part of the saints who obeys God's commandments and remain faithful to Jesus. It's going to be hard when it comes, because we could lose our homes. We probably will lose our homes, because we won't be able to, if we say, I'm not having this microchip, I'm not having this mark, we won't be able to pay council tax bills, we won't be able to pay any household bills at all. So we won't be able to stay in our homes. We won't be able to drive cars, because we won't be able to pay for the fuel. We won't be able to have insurance on them. Anything else? Everything that we're holding on to at the moment, we won't be able to have, because we won't be able to access our money, because it will all be tied up in the computer system that is there in place now. We are going to have to trust God totally to provide for us. And he can. And he will. And it may seem scary, but fear is the opposite of faith. The people Micah is speaking about in this passage, when he says, no one will make them afraid. They're the faithful ones who are following. They won't know fear because they have faith in Jesus. In Jesus Christ, the King of Peace. And we need to be getting stronger in our faith now, so that when it comes, we are able to stand and not lose the wonderful inheritance that God has promised to us for those who are faithful, for those who are willing to walk in the name of the Lord. I said these prophecies, Micah's prophecy, these other prophecies in the Bible are true. And they're coming fast. We have nothing to fear for eternity, for that wonderful future we've got to look forward to, but we must stay strong in him and not take the mark of the beast and never deny Jesus. And we don't know when it's coming, but it's coming very quickly. And it may well be in the next 5 or 10 years that we're going to have to take that stand, say, we're not going to have that. People, as we've heard in Lebanon and other places, they're going through awful persecutions, awful problems, so many people losing their lives. And for us, it's easy at the moment. It's really very, very easy as Christians. But we need to recognize that for us here, it's going to come at some stage, whether it is in our lifetime, and it probably will be, it's going to come. And we must make sure we never, ever deny Jesus and never take the mark of the beast. When we get there, I'm sure our mountaintop experience is going to be more beautiful than we could ever imagine. So we mustn't lose it. We must come closer to God. We need to be reading the Bible and learning more about him. We need to be worshipping him. We need to be praying to him more. We need to be spending more time with him, getting stronger in our faith and being willing at the end to say, I'm willing to give up everything for this and I'm willing to trust the Lord because he will look after me. He is faithful. He will provide, just as he provided for so many people in the Old Testament who had virtually nothing. He will provide for us today. It's going to be more beautiful when we get there. And so we must not lose it. All the nations may walk in the name of their gods. We will walk in the name of the Lord our God forever and ever. That's our goal. That's what we need to be aiming for. And the end is going to be fantastic. Let's pray. Father, we just thank you that we're here in your presence.